In April last year, Fairfax Media political reporter Andrea Vance reported that dozens of New Zealanders had been illegally spied upon by the GCSB, according to an unreleased report on lapses in the GCSB's handling of Kim.com. And when the Prime Minister's office asked a former senior public servant, David Henry, to investigate this, he asked the Parliamentary Service for details of Andrea Vance's movements around Parliament and even details of her phone calls from the Parliamentary Press Gallery. Now, in the end, Parliament's Privileges Committee announced a public inquiry into all this. The head of the Parliamentary Service resigned, and Peter Dunn, who was suspected to be Andrea Vance's key source, resigned as a minister. And ever since then, stories about snooping and spying have been in and out of the headlines. This past week, for example, the New Zealand Herald's David Fisher revealed new information released by US whistleblower Edward Snowden had showed that our national agency, the GCSB, is enmeshed in international intelligence networks. Now, at the recent Cannon Awards, Andrea Vance's scoop from last year was instrumental in her winning the Political Reporting Award and being named Overall Reporter of the Year. And she was also chosen as the Wolfson Fellow, who gets to travel to Cambridge University in the UK to study a topic of her choosing. Andrea Vance says she plans to study the increasing challenge facing journalists of protecting sources and information in the digital age, clearly a topic close to her heart. At the time that the spying on her was big news, Andrea Vance burst into print in the Dominion Post saying she was mad as hell at a government that had scant regard for the rights of the media. So this week I asked the award-winning reporter, was she still mad as hell?
I guess I am. I mean, a lot of things have happened to redress, what occurred. The Privileges Committee issued some new guidelines and pretty much condemned what had happened. I mean, the head of Parliamentary Service, Jeff Thorne, lost his job, which was very sad for him. There is currently still a complaint for the Privacy Commission, so things were done, which was excellent, and I think it was widely recognised that no one should be intercepting a journalist's communications, looking at them or monitoring their movements.
And there was another, the foreign correspondent freelancer John Stevenson, emerged that his phone metadata had been intercepted concerning stuff he was reporting on through Afghanistan. Apart from that, are you aware of any other instances where, you know, this sort of thing, this collection of data, might have impinged upon journalists?
No, I'm not. I doubt that if it was happening that we would be aware of it. It was only by a lot of digging that we were able to find out about it. And I think that it's the same for the John Stevenson case. I don't know John, I haven't talked to him, but I am aware that it was one of his sources, I think, that and one of his contacts that actually tipped him off as to what was going on.
What can reporters actually do to protect themselves if they suspect this might be happening?
There are a lot of things, actually, that journalists can do to protect their sources, to connect with whistleblowers who fear for their safety, fear for their own security. And I'm going to be looking at some of those tools. I mean, journalists are already beginning to adopt some of those tools. I mean, VPN and using Tor, navigating the deep web. And I see a lot of reporters now have PGP codes as well.
It's encryption of their work.
It's essentially encryption, yeah. Yeah, so that we can protect all our communications.
But are you, for instance, yourself, are you personally wary of using your landline phone in the Parliamentary Press Gallery, knowing that the records were asked for? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, I am. I still am. I'm super paranoid now. Of course I am. Who wouldn't be? I'm not someone who has a natural bent towards conspiracy. I tend to dismiss crazy theories, but I am super careful about who I talk to, where I talk to them, where I meet people. But of course I have to use my telephone. I have to use my telephone, I have to use my cell phone, I have to use my laptop. I have to meet people. Wellington's a small city. That's my job. So there are ways that we can take precautions. But yeah, not wanting to sound like a crazy, I am a lot more paranoid than I was. My dad's a former journalist. He was a journalist during the Troubles in Northern Ireland and, of course, had to be very careful about contacts. I made the point at the Cannon Media Awards ceremony the other night that it was a matter of life or death to protect contacts in Northern Ireland. But I was talking to my dad the night that I'd written one of the stories on the spying scandal. I was excited and I called home and I said, "Oh, Dad, I've got this story." And he said to me, you know, I would be really careful.
Don't tell me over the phone.
On the phone, who you're talking to, what you're saying, even don't be saying where you're going at weekends on the phone. And I said, don't be silly. This is not 1970s Belfast. This is a little old New Zealand. And then, lo and behold, a few months later, I found out that someone had been looking at my phone records.
Well, just in days gone by, we've seen more emails that involve New Zealand coming to light, sharing of information through New Zealand's intelligence agencies. And Ian Fletcher, the head of the GCSB, had earlier spoken at a privacy forum and said, look, you know, we're not engaged in the mass collection of data. Quote here, we don't do that stuff. It's important we keep on saying that. Do you believe them?
No, frankly, I don't. I mean, we're seeing more and more evidence from the Snowden documents. We had a whole raft of them this week that indicate that they did know that surveillance was going on, that they were complicit in it. And I just don't think that we've got the full truth. I think the government, previous governments, the GCSB, the SIS, are using semantics and the interests of national security, as they put it, to keep from the public what they're actually doing.
Edward Snowden recently received an award in the States and appeared down the line via the internet to make a speech accepting it. And he spoke about this, saying what he was doing, he felt, was returning a lot of this information to the public, information that had been gathered without their knowledge or consent, he felt, by the American National Security Agency, releasing it to the public so there could be a debate about it. But this also puts enormous pressure on journalists and the media, doesn't it? Because the volume of information, the stuff that's been in the news this week concerning New Zealand, I mean, those are old emails, aren't they, from a huge, huge trough of it. I mean, how do journalists get to grips with it?
This is one of the things that I want to study at Cambridge next year, is how that we can better equip ourselves to use this technology. Journalists are naturally, I mean, I'm hopeless with technology. I'm an absolute disaster. So I think that we're probably going to lose out on big scoops if we don't get to grips with this kind of stuff. I mean, I still print out documents. I don't know about other. I know other reporters use spreadsheets and whatnot, but it's getting down there and reading them with a highlighter pen and making notes.
But there are people in this country, aren't there? For instance, Nicky Hager, you know, he was in receipt of information off a huge drive about tax havens and so on. That became an international story. The New York-based group, the International Committee of Investigative Journalists, I think it was, had that information. Again, vast amounts of data. So there are some people, they're probably not working within the mainstream media. It hasn't been a core journalistic skill, has it, to be able to de-pack all this digital data?
No, it's not. And actually, I should plug that Nikki's setting up a network of investigative journalists, and we're having a conference at the end of June. This subject is going to be one, I guess, that we're going to be talking about a lot. We're going to share skills, really just try, like I say, to get to grips with how to do this stuff better.
I wonder, instead of putting effort into encryption and you know, being careful with your phones and so on, do the media and journalists actually need to get legal help here and maybe push for shield laws and things like that? Because what you're doing could counter sort of whistleblowing. Is that also an avenue that's worth exploring?
As journalists, we have to be responsible for our sources. Ultimately, we have to protect them and take every precaution. Likewise, whistleblowers also have to take precautions. And sometimes you just can't protect a source if they're reckless. On the other hand, I mean, the whistleblowing legislation in this country, and I know other organisations, particularly PSA, have mentioned that the legislation isn't adequate enough to protect whistleblowers. So definitely this needs to be some work in that area.
There was Andrea Vance, Reporter of the Year at the recent Canon Media Awards, who will soon travel to the UK as the Wolfson Fellow to research the surveillance of journalists, how it happens, and what they can do to resist it. And we'll hear more about that when she gets back.